everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. Thanks for sticking with me last week while I had an upper respiratory infection that I just could not kick. I am on antibiotics. You can probably still hear it a little bit in my voice. I sounded seriously unwell, so you wouldn't have wanted to hear my voice anyways. But we're back. This week I have a fun episode with returning guest, writer, director, producer, and visual effects master, Brandon Christensen. He was last on the show back in 2021 to talk about his movie Superhost, which is on Shudder, and this time we dove into his latest film, The Puppet Man, which came out this fall and is also on Shudder, and how he got into visual effects. He also gives some teasers for what his next movie is going to be, though he couldn't say too much about it, and he's in post-production for it right now. If you're in the film industry or you want to get into the film industry or the FX industry, you don't want to miss this episode. If you want to check out our Patreon, click the link in the show notes, and for as little as $1 a month, you'll get access to early episodes, a monthly newsletter, and more. I'd love to have you over there. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen, and let's get into my conversation with Brandon Christensen. Hey, Brandon, how are you doing? Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, no problem. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. For anyone who doesn't remember or has not gone back to listen to your first episode from 2021, do you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Brandon. I'm an independent filmmaker. And my latest film, The Puppet Man, just came out in October, and that was my fourth film. And I'm currently deep in post on my fifth.
Amazing. Just in case people don't remember, what's your favorite scary movie?
Favorite scary movie? Oh, God. I mean, that's a tough one. It's like naming your favorite kid, right? I kind of judge them differently because some movies I enjoy for like the entertainment value, but some, you know, when you see it at a specific point in your life, it is more impactful. So like something like the Blair Witch Project is kind of one that I'll always go to just because of where I was and who I was and how old I was when I saw it. And it just sort of, you know, how that kind of changed viral marketing and created it kind of like out of nowhere. I was just totally sucked up into the whole thing. And so when I saw it, I thought it was real. And it was devastating. So yeah, I mean, that's just kind of like, that was such an impactful film for me. So I think I'll stick with that one.
Awesome. Yeah. I think a lot of people would agree that that was very impactful and their favorite. So it's a great answer. So this is going to be kind of a different interview than I normally do since you've already been on. Since Superhost was released, The Puppet Man dropped last fall, as you said, onto Shudder. I got to see a screening at IFC, which was so much fun. It was such a spooky movie and so appropriate for the time of year. And it had great visual effects, which you, of course, did yourself. In case anyone hasn't checked out The Puppet Man yet, can you tell people what it's about?
So The Puppet Man is about a man that kills his wife and claims that he was unable to control his body when it happened. And now we cut forward like 10 years or so, and his daughter, who was in the house at the time, is now in college and kind of living on her own for the first time. And the news of her father's murder is kind of circulating again because he's on death row and about to be put down. And so all this news and all this stuff coming out is kind of reminding her of this past that she's long forgotten about. And she uncovers some things from her past that she doesn't fully remember. And it is to the detriment of everyone she loves. And it turns into just a bloody nightmare for everyone involved.
What was the shoot like and where did you shoot?
We shot that up in Buffalo, New York. And so, we were on Buff State's campus for 4 weeks and kind of just in and around that area. And it was super cool because at first we were supposed to shoot it in Serbia. And we had sort of a whole plan there. But then, you know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks before we were going to travel, everything shifted there because we got the Buff State thing. And they kind of opened their doors and allowed us to film there. And since it's a college campus movie, it made a lot of sense. And Buffalo was wild. It was just freezing because it was, you know, we started prep in January and shot mid-February to early, or mid-March roughly. Yeah, some of the coldest days I've ever experienced. And you know, being from Canada, that says a lot. It was cool though. I mean, it's just like such a gorgeous campus and just feels so American and, you know, brick buildings and all this stuff. There was just so much texture. The shoot itself was, you know, my first three films were very small scale. You know, they were like Superhost, Z and Stillborn. Most of them take place in one house. And so, you know, there's some benefits to that because you're kind of just always in the space. And if you're shooting a scene and you don't like it, you can go back and fix something. But on The Puppet Man, there were something like 47 sets in 20 days. And, you know, so you're constantly just going from point A to point B to point C. And, you know, some days you'll be like doing four locations, but doing giant set pieces as well, like the cop shootout, for example. That was, you know, that's sandwiched into a very, very short shoot day. So you're just kind of like, you know, it's cool because you're in all these new locations every day and it opens up the scope of the film. So you're constantly changing, you know, the viewers seeing new things all the time. And that's really nice. But you do lose a lot of that ability to kind of iterate and change things. You really have to go in with a plan and like execute and leave and be confident that you got it. And, you know, it's an indie film. You never have enough time, you never have enough money, but you know, I'm proud of the work everybody did, and I'm proud of the film and how it came out. I mean, it's, you know, it's not perfect, but I learned a lot, and you know, overall it was a really cool experience, and the relationships and stuff with the cast, it was amazing.
How did you find your cast?
So it was kind of a weird situation because this was the first film that I had worked with where I wasn't a main producer on it. And so it was kind of like I was brought into the project to develop it. And so when we did that, there was just a lot of learning curves that you're kind of figuring out. Because, you know, the movie I had done prior, Superhost, was something that I cast myself with. You know, I would have friends and friends of friends, and it was just sort of put together very intimately. And this one, because it has such a big cast, we went through some different avenues, and we kind of just sort of put it together in different ways. We had a casting director, a guy named David Guglielmo, who does a lot of stuff, and he got us a couple of a few of the leads. Like he got Zachary Levi, the guy that plays the dad, Cameron Wong, who plays Glenn, and Keo Sear, who was Daniel in it. And then the other ones, they were just self-tapes sent in, like kind of a friend of friends thing. And Allison Gorski, who came in to lead us, she just like knocked the audition out of the park and just had this sort of this weak and strong quality about her that she could kind of dial in by back and forth that I really liked. So yeah, I got really lucky with her and the rest of them. It was just, you know, it was just a great group that just gelled immediately from day one. And that, you know, when you're on set for 4 weeks and you're just working like day in and day out with these people, you want it to be people that you genuinely like to be around. And so, you know, we had a really fun cast, and they were all just like down to be there. They'd come to set even when it wasn't their day to shoot or anything. They just liked being around the process. And, you know, as a filmmaker, that's you can't ask for anything else because you know, I just love the process too.
I have to ask, was the snow on campus real?
The snow on campus was real. So that was another thing about Buffalo is that not only is it cold, but the weather swings like crazy. So I flew in around January 15th or something like that, and it was the day after a massive blizzard. And I guess, you know, they're known for that. Like they had that 5-foot snowfall the other day or the other year in 2022, I think. And yeah, so they're known for that. So I show up, the campus is like, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet snowbanks everywhere. And I'm just like, wow, this is, you know, you don't see that in film, which is cool. Like it's hard to do a snow movie because it sucks, but you know, it's such a cool texture. So we get there and, you know, we're doing all the scouting, all the prep, all that stuff like that. And then Clayton Moore and I, who was the cinematographer, we went to campus the day before production and we just sort of shot a bunch of angles for like the opening in the title sequence and stuff like that. And then, you know, we start shooting the film. And as we're shooting, the warmth, you know, it starts getting warmer and all of a sudden the snow is just like disappearing. And so, like, for I would say 75% of the film, there wasn't really that much snow around campus and everywhere. But because we have all this B-roll that we shot when it was crazy snowy, it kind of makes you feel like we're persistently in snow. But I mean, like you look at some of the set pieces at the end with like the bridge when she goes off, that was supposed to be a snowy scene, but when we showed up, and that was in week one, when we showed up, it was just pouring rain. And so we were like, we had snow machines that we were gonna use to just like add this falling snow, and it's gonna be this really pretty thing. And we had to just cancel all that and just lean into the rain. So the movie, when you watch it, and I guess it just worked out with the way we shot it, but it's kind of like very snowy, and then it just turns into a rainy movie. And it's really bizarre, but I guess that's Buffalo.
There are some pretty fantastic visual effects in it. If you can talk about your favorite without spoiling anything, can you tell me what your favorite is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple. I mean, it's the double death was really big for me just because, I mean, it's the big part of the movie. I know it's a spoiler, but it's in the trailer. But they were sequences that going into it, I didn't know how they would work really. So, spoiler alerts for people, two people die in this in horrible ways. But one of them, we had a plan, like the makeup artist was going to build this fake jaw for this guy. And it was a situation where they were building it and they just didn't have enough time for it. So, you know, when you're in prep and people are doing it, they're only on, you know, maybe 3 weeks before the movie starts, maybe 2 weeks. And so they have so many things to do. They have to come up with looks with all the actors, all that stuff. There's just not the time nor the money to really spend on gags like that. So, you know, at the beginning, you're all like, oh, you have all these high aspirations, but it becomes very, very obvious pretty early on that you're like, we don't have the budget or the time to do everything we need to properly. So that was something that I was really proud of because I was able to go, okay, that's okay. Let's not do a build. I'm just going to do it in VFX. And it became just a really simple VFX shot where you, I kind of, well, as we were talking about it, I was leaning on the movie American History X, which has the brutal curb stomp, right? And that's a scene that lives in the close-ups of the guy's teeth on the curb, and you feel the concrete and you feel his teeth, and it's a nightmare. And then when the action actually happens, it cuts to a huge wide and you don't really see anything, but because you saw the way his teeth were on the curb, you knew exactly what was going to happen. And so your mind is filling in all these blanks. And so when we did this workout scene, that was kind of my thing. I was like, okay, if we show all these, you know, the muscles and everything, his eye and his tooth and all these things are happening, we understand how much pain he's in. But when we do the final kind of thing, we're going to pull to a big wide, let it drop. And when we come in close to show the aftermath, instead of doing some like fancy build with makeup, let's just do it in visual effects. And I just shot three very simple plates. It was basically, we locked the camera off on this low shot and we used his hand as the foreground element. And so we just had him sort of hold the bar with his hand and he drops it out of frame. And then I had him laying on the bench and he was still out of focus because the focus was on his hand. And I had him looking up to the sky and just kind of choking. And I ran that. And then I had him turn his head and then had him choke again. And then I basically, using those two shots, I like created a split screen and it looks like his head's been twisted in half. So it was like super simple. We had some blood on the day, but it was just like three very simple shots and it's really gross. Like you don't really see anything. It's very implied because it's out of focus, but the sound and all that stuff, it just sort of sells this horrifying position that this guy is in where his head's been kind of ripped apart by this bar. And so that I was really proud of just because it was a low budget solution to a problem that you could spend tons of money on. And it's just as effective as if we did it the right way, you know? And that's just sort of something that I kind of pride myself on is being able to do bigger things on a lower budget. And that's kind of like my indie career has been built around that, like swinging for the fences a lot. Not all of them hit. Like there's some things in this movie that I regret, but you know, I'm at least I'm trying. I'm not trying, you know? And so I'm proud of that.
That's awesome. That was so interesting to hear you talk about that and be like, well, it's super easy. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, in
But
theory it's easy and it worked out. I'm proud of that one.
and then I have to ask also, this is also a spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched The Puppet Man. Was the fire real when one of the characters gets lit on fire?
Yeah, so that was another one that was also like, you know, in the script it was like you do fire and you're in a building and it's like, well, how the heck do you do that? And again, like we don't have a visual effects supervisor. It's just me kind of making things up as I go. And so how we did it was, I mean, I'll backtrack a little bit. The scene itself is very like there's a whole lead up to the scene that we show that we that happens. She's talking about the book and she's calling Ruby and there's all these things happening. And the plan that we had going into it was, as we found out at the end, was wrong. But basically, our plan at the time was like, okay, we're gonna have different stages of makeup for her for like the deterioration of the fire because this prosthetics take forever, you know. So it's gonna take them maybe 3 to 4 hours to do this final, like the final face that she's gonna have. And then they basically, I was told it would be faster to strip down and go to nothing than it would be to film with stuff on and then add a little bit and then add a little bit more. And because we were in the school library, we had such a finite time to work on. I think it was like 5 hours or something like that, but it was a hard cap. Like once 10 p.m. or whatever hits, it's like game over, you're done. And so already we're butting up against the clock because it's a huge sequence with effects, all that stuff. And so we show up, we're a little behind on the makeup, so we're setting up, we're ready, we're waiting, and then finally she comes out and we shoot her, and it's like we only need 5 seconds of her in this final makeup, right? So we shoot, we get a couple angles, and then we're like, okay, send her into makeup, and then we're just waiting, you know, we're just they've got to break it down, we got to do the second the first stage. And so we're able to shoot a few, you know, we get a makeup artist in there and we use her hand for like some of the inserts of using the book and like using the pen and stuff like that. And so we're able to shoot a little bit, but then we get to the second thing, the second stage, it's like an hour and a half wait, and we do it again and we're just like, oh shit, like we're now 3.5 hours into our shoot and we haven't shot the scene, which is the main part of the, you know, that's if 90% of it is in the buildup to the fire. And so she gets, you know, taken down to nothing, and then we're able to shoot, you know, in order, and we get the scene. But we had so little time. It was like by the time she was ready, I think we had 15, 20 minutes. And so we shot like a wide, we shot a medium, we shot a close, and that was it. And I was just, I left that day, and I was just like that, like that's like the scene in the movie, and I completely botched it. So, anyways, to do the fire stuff, what we did was we filmed with like lights on the book, and like we had these little flickering lights, and we like lit the background and had a lot of flickering happening. But then because we had shot so little, it was just like the wide, close, medium. We went one of the days when we were in the studio, we rebuilt a table and we had a book and we basically just like poured kerosene on it and lit it on fire and filmed it just in a black space. So it was, we had this element of this fire, and it was, we tried to match the framing as close as possible. So it was like, okay, let's start here. We'll do the wide and we'll get a big thing. And then we'll come into this three-quarter profile-y kind of shot and shoot it again. And then we had one of the producers built this like maquette top, shoulders, and head out of chicken wire. And we were able to dump, you know, douse that in kerosene, and we just, you know, put it into the fire, and it created this fireball. And so we shot all of the elements of the fire practically. And then I was worried. I was like, how is this going to work? But because we had done it so specifically and we already had the scene, when I went into editing and I just like overlaid that shot, it was just like boom, magic. And it was, I barely had to do anything. And I was kind of blown away because going into it, that was the big scene. Like, how the hell are we going to make this work? Because I did Fire and Z, and it's not easy. Like, it's very intensive on your computer, and it's just like, it can be very challenging. So that ended up being one of the easier sequences in the film to do the VFX on. And I was just kind of blown away by that.
That's so interesting. How did you initially become interested in doing visual effects?
I started doing it just because I had to. When I was like, I don't know, when was this? 2009 maybe. I had a camera, and I was just sort of like, I was working in this corporate production company. It was like very, you know, talking heads and very corporate event stuff like that. And it was great because I was around cameras and I was, you know, making a living wage. It was, you know, making very little, but I had the experience to be on set a lot and just filming, and then I could also borrow gear and bring it home. So I would all the time, I would just write little skits and things like that, and I would take it home and I'd bring a green screen home, and I was like, I'm gonna learn how to do this. And then I would light myself and I would shoot myself, and then I would be like, okay, let's put like 500 Brandons in a shot. And so I would just like figure it out, and I would use like tutorials online from like Video Copilot and stuff like that, and just slowly built up a skill set that I could apply to other projects. So then It Stains the Sands Red was the first movie I ever worked on, and I produced it. They had some VFX shots, just really light things, like a couple matte paintings and some gunshot things, and they sent them to me, and I got to work on a movie. And then all of a sudden I had, you know, experience with that pipeline on how do you take footage from a movie and do the effect and send it back and all that stuff. And so when I did Stillborn, you know, I don't remember how many shots there was on that, probably 70 or 80. And that was made for so cheap that we just didn't have enough money for a visual effects artist. So I was just like, all right, I'm just going to figure it out. So I did ha have a friend do a few shots that I couldn't figure out, but, you know, I did 95% of them in that film. And just, again, it was just like learning how to do things you know, I just had to because there was no money. And then that just kind of gave me the confidence, like, oh, okay, cool, I can do this. And then with Z, I did every single shot on that. On Superhost, I did every single shot on that. Puppet Man, I did 307 shots, and I hired a guy to do 10, which like these crow shots and a few things with 3D that I wasn't able to do. But yeah, it was insane. But yeah, it's just one of those things. And I've kind of spun it off into, you know, I'll do shots for other people now. And so I constantly get calls from people like, hey, I need this thing painted out of a shot or whatever. And it's a good tool set to have, because when you're on set and you understand how VFX works, you understand the better way, like the best way to shoot it effectively, that you're not just fixing it in post, you're shooting it in conjunction with post, you know? So, you know, it's still ongoing. I'm still figuring things out, but I just feel like it's a good tool to have because I am editing, I'm doing visual effects, all this stuff. So being able to do that is a very powerful tool on set to save time and money and everything. And when I'm doing, you know, you're doing low budget stuff like I am, it's super invaluable.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, and you're really good at it. So, in addition to being a fantastic horror director, you now do visual effects for other people's movies. You worked on in 2023 alone, Influencer and It's a Wonderful Knife, in addition to your own movie. What is your favorite VFX to create?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, my least favorite is car comps, like when you do green screen driving. It's just one of those weird things where the lighting has to be just right and the plate that like the a plate is a shot that you're compositing in. So it's like, you know, you go out and you shoot a car driving and you just have like the moving background. That's a plate. So each layer of a shot is called a plate in visual effects. So when I say a plate, that's what I'm talking about. But I enjoy taking different plates like that and compositing them together and just sort of creating something out of nothing. Because there's, you know, in visual effects, there's a lot of things like, oh, paint out this mic pack or paint out, you know, there's a water bottle on the table, like, you know, and there's something like that. And those are kind of just like, you know, just brute forcing your way through until it's gone kind of thing. But when it's actually, there's some artistic quality to it and you're making choices and it's like, okay, well, you know, this background I'm going to completely change for something else. I'm going to go out and shoot this plate again of a city and I'm going to put it in this thing. And you're just like creating m magic essentially out of nothing. Those are really exciting because you're just like, you're doing something and the intent is that the audience thinks that you just shot it for real. So it's like those invisible VFX that those are my favorite because it's like when it works and you just buy it, it's just, you know, it's one of those jobs that you're not supposed to notice, you know? Like there's showy stuff, there's blood, there's gunshots, whatever, there's all that stuff and you're supposed to notice it. But when you can get, it's like a magic trick to me. It's like sleight of hand. You're like telling the audience to look over here and ignore the fact that maybe something doesn't look as good over here. And so you're really kind of just like hijack their eyeballs and tell them where to look. And you know, it's really fun to be able to do that. And it's cool because when you're in the middle of it and you're watching the same, you know, a shot is maybe 1 second long. It's 24 frames. You're just staring at these 24 frames and you see every single flaw in it. But then when you are done and you deliver it and you watch it, even with those flaws, like you don't notice them ever. You know, like in context, it's just a quick shot. It happens. Your eye goes to where that's going to go. Typically the person's eyeballs, because that's where your eyes typically go. And it just sort of becomes like a magic trick. Like you're like, oh, I didn't even notice that there was visual effects there. And that's really exciting because it's just like cool. Like I got away with it, you know, because you're always like, there's always imposter syndrome in this business. You're just like, should I be doing this? You don't know. And so when you kind of get by the audience with things like that, it's pretty cool.
Do you have any advice for people who want to get into this in the industry?
Individual effects? Yeah, I mean, just, you know, YouTube is such an invaluable resource now. There's just everything you could ever want to learn is on YouTube. So, you know, if you want to do it, just like take your phone outside, shoot something, and then all of a sudden, you know, put a spaceship in the sky, whatever. You know, it's very easy to just go out, grab a quick shot, and just see if you can make magic out of it. And so I would say just like have something to shoot, because I know a lot of people are like, well, I don't know what to do. It's like, well, just create something. You know, if you've got the time and the know-how, like you don't need the know-how, you can find that out. But just get a shot of something, steal a shot of something, doesn't matter. Just take something and try and create something out of that. And that process, you know, if you get into it and stuff like that, it can be very rewarding because you're just like, you know, you're creating. It's just that feeling of just like taking something and making nothing, you know, or taking nothing and creating something out of it.
What is your favorite practical effect that you've seen in a horror movie in the past?
Oh, shoot. That's a tough one. A practical horror effect. I mean, you can go back to, you know, when you go back to something like The Thing or something like that, some of the work that they did with just the puppeteering and just the effects are insane. And it's one of those things that like you don't see anymore. You know, like the 80s Blob movie, it's like so insane what they did. And Poltergeist, like when they do the house sucking up at the very end, there are these things that, and this is just like a general thought about film now, is that back then, when they were doing that, they had to make everything up. You know, you didn't just have like After Effects and, you know, all this stuff on a computer where you just type blah, 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 and you can create it. Like, they had to pioneer all this stuff. And so all these people like John Knoll, who went on to create Photoshop, and all those ILM guys, like, what they were doing is so incomprehensible to me. Like, I can't figure out how they did it, because they're literally working, you know, side by side with someone like Spielberg or Carpenter or whatever, and they're creating out of nothing, like, literally. Like, they have to come up with a solution, like motion control cameras, things like that, that they had to do. It's just like, it's so much work that it took these teams of people to do things that now I can do on my own. And you know, it turned the industry into a situation where I think you see it a lot now, where films are so big and broad, and the effects are so good that no one really, like, there's no wow factor anymore, because anything is possible now. And because anything's possible, it doesn't surprise you. You know, you watch like Jurassic Park back in 93, 94, whenever that was, and it's like you've never seen a dinosaur on screen before like that. So it's magic. And now it's like you see one of these Jurassic World movies and you're just like, oh, cool, it's like 37 velociraptors fighting a T-Rex that in 94 would be insane and impossible. But now it's just, you're just kind of like bored by it. It's like, okay, cool, just waiting. And now it's turned into like the story matters, the characters matter. And I think that sometimes people forget that that's what people want to see. It's like, where's the heart? Where's the story? What's the character? And you know, there's this focus on big effects and stuff like that, but it all ends up just sort of blurring together, you know? And so when you have a film like Top Gun, which used, you know, a crazy amount of visual effects, but they still shot, you know, most of that movie with jets and stuff like that, and then they replaced them all and did, you know, did a bunch of work. But it was exciting because you're just like, I've never seen an aerial fight like this. And if it was just CG, it wouldn't have looked like that, you know? But because they went up there and they shot and they you know, they re used real planes, it had this magic to it. And I think that just it hit people, you know, everyone kept going to that movie because they're like, I've never seen anything like this. And that's what was happening in like the 80s and the 90s with horror movies and everything like that. So that, you know, I think, you know, just The Thing, Jurassic Park, all those were just unbelievable.
So you said that you're in post-production for your next movie. Can you talk about it yet?
I can't. It's we
No.
shot it in secret last year, and
Wow.
it's we're kind of like, we have to do a pickup shoot in a few weeks here, because just we're doing visual effects on it. And it's a I've actually brought a company in on this one, because it's way more advanced than anything I can do. And it's like, we're doing things that I've never seen before, which is really exciting, but it's also terrifying, because if it doesn't work, it's like the movie's gonna fall apart pretty hard. So it's you know, it's pretty stressful. But the team that we have out of Vancouver, they're a young team, but they're doing some really cool work with it. So I'm hopeful. You know, the stuff that I've seen, it looks pretty crazy, but like, we're talking like CG monster, we're talking, you know, just it, full 3D environment, stuff like that. But it's a found footage movie, I can say that. And it's pretty neat. I'll tell you more about it in private, but it's like, it's one of those things that I feel like it has a lot of potential to get a lot of people talking about it, because it's one of those ideas that when you hear it, it kind of clicks, and you're like, oh, like, I've never, you know, how has that not been done before? And it will if we wait too long. So we're just like trying to finish it up before it's too late and somebody else jumps on it, because it's pretty cool. But you know, we'll come back and we'll talk about it next time.
Awesome. Is there any release date in mind for that yet?
No, so it's
No.
totally
Okay.
independent. You know, we've talked to the usual suspects about it, but everyone just wants to see it, because, right, you know, it's everyone gets it and they understand it, but they just want to see it because it is so novel that I think that there's some hesitation from everybody, like, can they pull this off? And I think we're pretty close. It's just these last pieces that we have to get right, or else, you know, again, it's just not going to work. But yeah, I would imagine that there's a chance it comes out this October, just because of how things are coming with it. You know, we should be done it in a couple months, and then, you know, we can figure out a landing place for it. But yeah, it's got a lot of potential. I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, I will keep my eyes and ears peeled. Thank you so much for being here. This was so great and so interesting and informative to someone like me, and I'm sure lots of other people listening who don't know a lot about visual effects. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. Yeah, Instagram's kind of my main thing. It's just the Brandon Christensen on there. Yeah, I don't really post anywhere else, and so just hit me up there if you want to see what I'm doing.
Yeah, he posts really interesting reels about how he does his effects, so it's super cool to watch. Well, thank you again and best of luck with
Thank you.
post-production.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brandon Christensen, and thanks again to Brandon for coming on. I'll leave links to his socials in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram, Who's There PC. Don't forget to check out our Patreon. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at who's there PC@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.